This is Karen Musgrave, and I'm doing a Quilters SOS Save Our Stories interview with Edna Patterson Petty. And Edna is in East St. Louis, Illinois, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we're conducting this interview over the telephone. Today's date is January 11th, 2009, and it's 10:28 in the morning. And Edna, thank you so much for agreeing to do this interview with me.
You're welcome.
So please tell me about your quilt, Road to Redemption.
Okay, first I'll tell you sort of how it came to be.
Sure.
And I got a call November the 13th asking if I would like to participate in creating an inaugural quilt, and it was supposed to be 44 people chosen, and I had to make a quick decision because I said Carolyn Maslumi said it had to be, you know, you had to commit yourself once you said yes, because they were going to move forward. So I knew it was a great opportunity, so I said okay, and then I thought for some reason that I had till December the 31st, and then the next day I got an email, which was a group email, stating that the quilts were due to be in D.C. December the 15th, which speeded up the time frame that I had given myself. So once I got over that initial shock, the ideas really started pouring in, because I'm always jotting down little vignettes or whatever when I'm watching TV or just doodling or whatever, and then I have a book of ideas that I've done for years since art school, and sometimes I just kind of go through those things and look and see if anything applies to what I want to do. And for some reason the song, the Redemption song by Bob Marley, came into mind, and so I just said, well, the Road to Redemption. And we had restrictions on the art quilt. It could not have a lot of images of Obama on it. It couldn't have a lot of things talking about dealing with slavery, things like that. So with those limitations, I had to think of how can I tell that story that I wanted to tell without using all of the other the things that were restricted. So the road came first, and I like to recycle, so I had some rich colored silk draperies that I wanted to. I didn't know what I was going to do with, but when I looked at them, I said, oh, this is perfect, because I'd already taken the curtain, the draperies apart and had it laid out. And so it's a rich stripe color. It's sort of like a cinnamon color, cayenne, and turmeric when you think of the seasonings. So it was those types of colors, and it was just very rich. And so I used cotton fabric to lay out my design. And I didn't sew anything at first. I just laid out my, I chose a 12 by 12, I'm sorry, 36 by 36 backdrop. And after I laid that down, then I started laying my fabric on top, trying to decide what I wanted to do. And I created the road first, and then I had a winding road. And at the end of the road, I had the presidential seal, and then a small image of Obama's family in the after he was chosen for president-elect. And then I was like, what can I do to balance this piece out to still tell the story? And so then I thought of hands, and I looked through my little journal, and I used a pair of hands. One hand is black, one hand is white, because of his ancestry. And then I called that the ancestor's hands. And from the hands, there was a growth, a foliage-like, and it was and some other fabric that I had saved, and it had sort of a grayish black and white type of foliage, and I cut that out to the shape that I wanted, and that was about the growth leading up to the change that he was promising to bring to America. But it, even though it was foliage, it was dark, but I thought about the dark times and things that people had to go through in order to get to that day. So after that growth emerges up the side of the right side of the piece, then there was a red heart, which is the flower, and it's in bloom. And from that flower was emerging the words about hope and change and humility and all that. And then on the opposite side, which is the left-hand side, I used the same foliage, but inside this, there was a little vignette inside the foliage that showed a little bit about civil rights. There's a pair of feet, and that was symbolic of the marching. There's a bus that was symbolic of Rosa Parks and the bus boycott. And then there was a tiny image of a shackle, so that's the slavery. And then there was a stack of books, which is education. And then I had the word vote because of the voter registration and all of that people had to endure to have the right to vote. And that growth, there's a growth that's going around this little encapsulation. And then it goes up the path, and at the end of that growth is a door, and the door is slightly ajar, and the dove is emerging through the door, and it has keys in its beak, and the keys are like for a brighter day, a brighter future, and not just for one group, but for all people. And so that's how the piece came to be. It just started to unfold as I was laying my pieces out. And so once everything was in place, then I started actually attaching it down. And it was just an overwhelming feeling to be chosen, but to also be able to have everything ready. I didn't have to go out and buy anything. All I had to do was just go to my studio and just start using what I have. So that was really great for me.
Is this typical of how you work?
You know, I don't have a specific style of working. What I do, I guess to someone else they would say it was a specific style, but to me, I get an idea, and sometimes I'll get an idea from a title, sometimes from a feeling, sometimes from something someone has said. So I work things over in my head for a long time, and then just start working from there. So I have a strange way of getting to a finished product. I have a process that goes on first. I don't always have to lay it out on paper. I can work it in my head. And one thing I've learned to do is to trust my instincts. So if I start doing something and it doesn't go exactly like I had it in my head, I don't fight it. I let it take the path that it wants to go in and work with that, because I learned the hard way that sometimes when you try to force something, that's what it is, it's forced, and it doesn't flow smoothly. So I have a strange way of working and laying out things, but it works for me.
Do you know why there was the limitations of images and no slavery?
I think because when you have 44 people that are going to create a quilt and you don't give them limitations, you could have a wall of nothing but images, you know, because today a lot of people print out the images on, put it out on fabric and then include it in the quilt and that type of thing. I think that was what the person that curated the show was wanting, to have more creativity. Because if you have a whole lot of images, that's going to cover your fabric, and then you're getting your quilt quickly done and maybe not necessarily telling the type of story that he wanted each person to tell. Roland Freeman was a curator of the show, and he wanted everyone to just kind of tell the story from the best way they could without having to rely on all the other props. It was okay to use, he said, a little bit of imagery if you needed to, but he just didn't want to be heavily laden with it.
What's the title of the exhibition?
The title of it's just the inaugural, I keep messing that word up, inaugural quilt for Obama.
Okay. And where is it going to be?
It's going to be, I'm sorry, I don't have that date in front of me, but it's going to be at the, it's actually today, it's at the Historical Society in D.C., and it's the reception is at 2 o'clock today, and I think it's the second floor of that building.
And how long is it going to be out?
Well, when I talked to him yesterday, it was supposed to go to the 31st, but he's hearing that they might want it to go for longer. So it's because when we sent our quilts, we were told to be prepared to be away from them for at least a couple of months. So things are still unfolding, because the way this all came together was so quickly. Normally, when someone is curating a show, it takes 6 months to a year curating a show. Well, Roland's still putting this together November the 4th, President-elect Obama was chosen. So he had a very short time frame. And so with Roland being in D.C., he calls Carolyn Maslumi, who is in Ohio, And she, in turn, called the artist to find out about the participation. So it's, so the way everything has been going has just been through the phone or email, and everyone is having to just kind of work feverishly and getting everything done.
Have you seen any of the other quilts?
I saw a couple that was online because some people have posted their images, or if they were interviewed or something, and then the newscaster showed the pictures online. I've seen a few like that, but all 44, no, I have not.
Oh, too bad.
Uh-huh. And I'm hoping that, I don't know if it will, but I'm hoping that like a catalog or a book or something comes from this event. Where we can see all, for those of us that were not able to go, can see all of the pieces together.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, it would be wonderful. So tell me about your interest in quilt making.
Well, I have a strange interest in the way it evolved, because I never thought of myself as a quilt maker. I just thought of myself as an artist. But my beginning started when my mom used to make bed quilts, and she always recycled our old clothing, and so I would help to prepare the fabric, cut the pieces, you know, take the waistbands off the skirts or the, you know, with old pants, open the legs up, and then just square things off. And then we had a drawer that the buttons went in, and a little bag that the zippers went into. And so that was my first introduction into fabric. But I never had an interest in actually making quilts, because my mom didn't know how to sew by sewing machine. She used a needle and thread. And so when I tried that, I pricked my fingers too much, so I didn't like that part of it. So I was just satisfied with helping to prepare the fabric for her. So it wasn't until being in high school, I decided to take sewing, because we had to take home ec. And I didn't want to take cooking, because I was the oldest of seven, so I already knew had to do a lot of cooking at home. So taking the sewing, and then I developed such an interest in it, and my grandfather bought me a sewing machine, so I started sewing quite a bit. And because of lack of funds, I learned how to make my own clothing. And it was just a course of events. In my adult life, I decided to go to school, and then I got an art school, and my background was fabric there and studio art, and so I learned how to dye fabric and to weave and that type of thing, and then it just came back over into the quilting area. It wasn't that I went into school wanting to be a quilter or anything like that, and I still don't necessarily classify myself as a quilter. It's just that I love fabric and whatever way I can do fabric, and the way that is described as in terms of quilt is there's a top, and there's a middle layer, and there's a bottom. So therefore, that's a quilt. So there I went with that attitude of it all. And so sometimes I would do soft sculptures that had all of these elements to it. And so it was other people that classified me as an art quilter, and I just kind of like went along with it. But I do other things as well.
So how do you define it? Do you define yourself as an artist?
As an artist, yes. But I don't necessarily define myself as a quilter.
Okay.
Yeah, I define myself as a multimedia artist, because I like to do mosaics. I like to do sculptures, and I just recently learned how to weld. So I like to do a multitude of things.
Oh, I would love to learn how to weld.
It's fun. It's intimidating, but once you learn it, it's fun.
Yeah, I like to learn that.
Okay. And it doesn't take very long. You know, the best thing to do is just, if you want to do it, just take that step, you know, and find a good teacher. Well, I actually took it at the junior college, and so it was a class of beginners, and I was the only woman there, but everyone else in the class, they were studying to be welders. All I wanted was the basic things, you know, to learn how to weld, to do sculptures and everything. And so once I learned the basic steps, then they let me kind of go on my own in terms of working. I didn't have to kind of follow the path of the guys, because that was not a career choice for me. So you might enjoy it.
So do you think you'll ever combine welding and quilt making?
I think I would, because I like to salvage things, because, you know, I told you very early I learned how to salvage fabric from working with my mom. I still do that. I salvage. I can be riding somewhere and I see an old chair on the side of the road or old piece of furniture or something, and I salvage it and I try to figure out how can I give it a new life. So it would be fun to figure out how to maybe build some type of a armature or frame or something that's small enough to be inside, and then I can incorporate fabric with it. I would love to do that. I love marrying different things together and seeing how it works. And if it doesn't work, I just try something else. But I love trying to do that.
So how do you balance your time?
I do art. Art is my life, so I'm doing that all of the time. And then when I'm not doing it, I try to spend more time with my husband here, and I'm on the phone with my daughter, or just kind of go to gatherings or something like that. But I'm still gathering information for art, even when I'm at events, because of the way I think. I'll see something that might evoke a feeling in me to how you file things away. Like with you writing stories, you might see something and you file it away for future reference.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I do. It's not necessarily I'm going to anything trying to get some information. It's just if something comes up, I just kind of file it away and come home and I might jot it down for future reference or something I want to try. And also, so even though when I do other things to balance out the art, the idea is still not very far away. But that works great for me, because if art was taken from my world, just all of a sudden I couldn't do it anymore, then that would really be the end of my life, because I'm so in tune to it and want to do it all the time. I actually dream about art. When I'm looking at movies on TV, I'm looking in the background to see, like what's on the wall and the way the furniture is, even though I'm watching the story too. So I'm just very into it.
Do you belong to any art or quilt groups?
Mostly online. There's a quilters group I belong to, and I join a lot of different things. There's a mosaic group that I belong to, and it's about two or three different quilting groups. And so I'll work with, sometimes they'll have those round robins where you just kind of do, someone does a square and then pass it on to the next person. So I participate in a lot of things like that. And so that just keeps me involved with other people in doing the arts. And I learn a lot about some things that maybe I haven't done or would like to do, or just the inclusion of other things, because that takes me back to that feel of when I was in art school and you had the people to be around, the creative people. And, the painting class is right across the hall from you, or the sculpture class is in the next building or something like that. Even though this is via the Internet, it still gives me that feel of participation and giving and taking and that type of thing. But it, right here in town where I live, I'm the most creative person I know. So if a lot of things are going on, it would be something that I would have to pull together and that type of thing. There's always been talks of quilting groups, but it just never came to be. So I have to get my fix where I can. Yeah.
So describe your studio.
My studio is in my basement, and I hate to call it the basement because when you say basement, that's what you think of. But that's what my studio is. But actually, I work all over my house. But in terms of storing my stuff, it's in the studio. That's where my sewing machine is. And a lot of my supplies, but I get to a just like when I'm working on a art quilt and I do the basic sewing and I'll lay it out, then I'll come upstairs and then when I'm doing some handwork, and I might sit in front of the TV and do handwork on it. So actually, the studio is wherever I am.
Now, how do you quilt your quilts?
After I lay them out and get everything the way I want it, then I do a lot of machine stitching. And once I do my machine stitching, a lot of times there's some hand stitching that's going to go someplace. Hand stitching for me, to make a whole quilt by hand is too slow, and I get anxious. So I don't like to do that. I think it takes me back to when I was little, the slowness of it. Whereas some people say they get a lot of joy in doing a whole lot of hand stitching. It's okay, but it's not my first love. I love the sewing machine. So I actually lay things out that way first. So then if there's anything where I'm, because sometimes I add embellishments like buttons or beads or something like that, so that's a lot of hand stitching. And that's okay, because then it's kind of like doing the finishing work of it. But to create a whole quilt by hand, I think that would be torture.
So what advice would you offer someone starting out?
I would, regardless of what your passion was in terms of the creativity, do it for you. And I think that helps a lot, because when you start out something and you're trying to do it to please other people, then you run into a lot of roadblocks, because you're waiting for validation from everyone, when the validation should really come from yourself, you know, where you're doing what brings you joy and what you want to spend your time doing. And that's what has worked for me for years. It's just creating for me. When someone else likes it, that's a plus. That's the icing on the cake. But when I did the Road to Redemption, I went into my zone and I was laying it out the way I wanted to see it. I wasn't thinking about what other people are going to say about it, if other people are going to like it, because it satisfied a need in me. I was able to put all my emotions into it, and that would be my advice for anyone. Whatever you're doing, put you into it and let it go from there. Because once I started on the Road to Redemption, it sparked a whole series. And normally I don't do series, but now I'm doing a series of based on that quilt, and I'm on number 3. And I can't believe I'm on number 3. No, actually I finished number 3, and I can't believe it, because I started November the 13th. This is just now January the 11th, and I finished my third quilt. And I started on the fourth one, and I dream about the other 3 that I'm going to do.
Wow, so you're going to do 6?
Yeah, so I'm going to do 7. I'm going to do a series of 7.
Okay.
And I've already got my titles rolled out. So once I decided that I was going to do this, the titles start coming first, and then I start creating things to go with the title, and it's all with the same background fabric of the curtain I was telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
It's all that same color. But and that's the only connection. Well, that's not the only connection. The connection, the fabric being the same in the background, and an image somewhere of Obama in the pieces as well. But just making it work for each title that I choose. Because after I did Road to Redemption, then the second one was called A Bright and Sunny Day. And then I've gone on like that. And the one that's Bright and Sunny Day is going to go to the show for Sue Whalen in Maryland.
So tell me more about it. Go ahead.
Okay. That was based on when Obama came to St. Louis, and 100,000 people were there, and it was a bright and sunny day. It was a very beautiful day, and I just remember that image. And so on that, there's an image of a sun, and then there's an image of I have the imagery of the people, and then I took the someone had given me. A dashiki, and in the neckline of the dashiki is kind of like a circle, and it was a lot of embroidery. So I cut that out carefully, and that's placed around the group of people. And at the base of that circle is a pair of hands. Again, my black and white hands for the ancestry, and it's touching this circle, so it looks like you would be peering into a portal, seeing what's going on. And then I recycled a T-shirt that had the American flag on there, and it had 3 daisies. So in those 3 daisies, there's the center daisy is an image of Obama, and to the left is an image of his grandmother, and to the right is an image of his wife. And then I have a tree. And to me, tree is symbolic of strength and stamina, and trees go through a lot with all of the climatic changes and stuff. The tree is still there. Sometimes it might topple a little bit, but basically the tree is still there. So on the tree, I have words of hope, you know, and like praise and goodwill and the word hope and that. And then there's a little pool that's around the base of the tree, which again came from this shirt that someone gave me, and it's all blue, so that represented my water. Then I have a jug, and the jug is tilting over, and then I have the word love coming from the jug. And it's pouring love into the healing waters that hopefully will touch us all, and we become more helpful of each other, and think about what our instead of thinking about all of our differences, think about the things that we do share, the things that we do have in common, and just, you know, just kind of moving that divide away a little bit and just people just getting along. So that's kind of what that piece is all about. And so the whole idea of that started with the image from him being in St. Louis. So I thought, I'll take one little image of something and just try to create a storyline around it.
So why has Obama inspired you to make so many quilts?
It's because, not just because he's African-American, but that has a lot to do with it. But it was his message, and it was a message of inclusion for people. It was not about Black America or White America. It was just for America. And when he was talking about the United States and really meaning that, it just struck a chord to me. I never watched politics. My husband has always been involved in politics. But when Obama ran, all of a sudden, I became attached to the cause and watching the TV. I was watching CNN and MSNBC, and I was able to talk to people. If they asked me questions about, well, this particular person, I was just watching it. I was like a fiend watching it and that type of thing. So I was full of emotions about the whole thing. And then I just remembered about Martin Luther King, and when Martin Luther King died 40 years ago, and then here, Obama's becoming the 44th president 40 years after he died. It was just all that emotion stirred in me. And so when I watched all the way up until when they said President-elect Obama, I burst into tears. I could not. It was like a well running over. I just was so full of emotion. So that's how all of this has started, just still going based on all that emotion that that I was going through in the course of watching the political outcome and hearing what people were saying, even the negative things of what people were saying, and how politics brings out the ugliness in some people, and all, and it was just taking all of those emotions and putting it together, and how can I do something with it other than just feel it and wear it. So that's how the series came to be. It's just because so much emotions inside it, and it inspires so many quilts. And I chose 7 because 7 is a number of completion, and it's a spiritual number. And so I just right away knew that I was going to do 7 quilts. I didn't know at the time how fast I would start doing them, because I hadn't yet finished number 1. But once I finished number 1, then right away, I had already started laying number 2 out. You know how I would get to a certain point on one quilt that I needed to rest, and then I had laid out my other little 36 by 36, and I got that because I had prepared my whole piece of fabric. Because once I opened the curtain up, I laid it all out the way I wanted, and I cut it into my equal parts. And I thought it was meant to be, I think. It was just meant to be.
So what are your plans for this series?
Well, I want to show them. I, of course, want to sell them. And I just want to let it go where, if I could, I would like to show them all together. I don't know if that's a possibility because someone has already said that they want to buy the one that's Road to Redemption. And also, and then the third one, there's a person that's having, she has an annual brunch at her house every year. It's a businesswoman, and it's she calls it the Martin Luther King brunch. Well, this year is the Obama Martin Luther King brunch. Well, it's Martin Luther King's name first, but Martin Luther King Obama inaugural brunch. And so she always has a very large cake, and so the image of this third quilt is going to be on the cake. So we already gave her the image yesterday, and so she's going to have it placed on have them. I don't know how they do that, but they design it, and then when they get through with the icing on the cake, it looks like your image. So that's going to be there. But it's I don't have a laid out plan for what's going to happen to the quilts. I think that will be revealed to me once I finish them all. I just know I'm driven right now to get them done, and I just kind of figured out as I go, just like the way these quilts have been revealed to me. I've been going into the next one and the next one and the next one, based on the feeling. And I'm like I said, I work from my instincts and I trust my instincts. And I guess it will all be revealed in the end what's going to happen with them.
Yeah. So tell me more about Sue Whalen's.
The way hers came to be, Sue had put the call out for artists. It was totally different from the thing with the where I was chosen for one in the 44. There was a personal call where they asked if I would do it, but Sue had did the online call for one of the groups that I'm on, and so and at that time she was trying to figure out if it could be done and trying to find a venue for it and all of that. And so I told her that I was interested and I would create something for it. And then she started saying something first online, and then I got the call from Mass Lumi after I had committed to Sue about doing the quilt. So then I went on and did my first quilt, but then when Sue's date was a little bit different than the date for the first quilt, then I knew I could, meet both deadlines at the same, it would be okay. I wouldn't have to just call Sue and say, oh, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I'm still able to do it. So I've got that quilt done. So all I have to do now is just get it in the mail to the destination at the college and everything. But it was just such irony that the way it has all come about, because I don't even know if Sue and Carolyn Maslumi even know each other. I really don't know. But it was just the fact that being on that quilting list is how I got the information.
Isn't it amazing that we have two quilt exhibits centered around one president?
You know, Obama, and I know this is not his intention, because his intention is to do what he did, but he has inspired so many artists. I've gone online and did just a search, Obama quilts, and it's just amazing that not just quilts, but sculptures, because even CNN had a little thing on there where they were spotlighting different Obama art. So they were just saying how, and now there's a Marvel comic book, and it's coming out. It's not out till Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, and he's on the cover of the magazine of the comic book. So he's inspired a whole thing about that. And so it's just been great that one person can have such a positive impact. We're hoping that we don't build up something so great in ourselves that when he does something that we are so let down, but because he is human and all of that. But it's been such great inspiration, and I know that if it has worked for anyone else as it has for me, it's just phenomenal because it's such a great feeling. And the world is just ready for a change. It is truly ready for a change, and for everyone to be more inclusive, because like when we are talking back and forth on the internet, I don't know Sue. There's a lot of people I don't know, but we're able to have conversations. We're not about you're black or you're white or you're this or you're that. You're talking about your general interests and that type of thing. And so that's what we need in the world, is just people being able to talk about their differences and sharing their likenesses and just living, but not try to destroy anyone. So that's kind of what he's inspired a little, I think. I could be wrong, but that's the way I feel about it.
So how do you want to be remembered?
A lady that saw art in everything that she did, just try to make the world a better place through her creativity. I like to tell stories through my art. I like to create my own beauty. Where there is no beauty at times, I like to create it that way. I like working with people to try to help them find out what their strengths are, because a lot of people say, well, I'm not creative, I can't do this and I can't do that. We all have a strength, and I like trying to help people find their strength. It doesn't have to be about art, even though I might use art as a vehicle, but it could be that person is good at cooking or speaking or whatever, and we all have a story to tell. And I, for the people that I work with or I'm around, I want to help them tell their story.
What do you think is the biggest challenge confronting quilt makers today?
The biggest challenge?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe having a venue, because I don't think the challenge is creating the quilts, but having a venue to show the quilts or someone to want to purchase the quilt. I think that's the biggest challenge, you know. The easiest thing is getting the quilt together and putting your ideas in cloth and that type of thing. And people like Carolyn Maslumi, Roland Freeman, Sue Whalen, those are great people to have to help quilters have a venue to show the work that they're creating. Yeah, because if we were always just separate and just create it and just create it and then put it to the side and just create the next one, then no one is seeing it. So the biggest challenge is just having the right people to help you get your work out there, to set up the things so they can be seen and hopefully be bought.
Is it difficult to let go of quilts?
Not for me. I don't know for other people, but not for me, because my satisfaction is in the creative part, the process and the end results of it all. That's where I get my satisfaction. I always have them professionally photographed, so I have an image of it, and I have the feeling that goes along with it, and I record the story to go along with the image, and I'm okay. Now, it's just like when you birth your children. You don't hold them up under you forever. You set them forth and let them free and that type of thing. That's the same thing I do with my art. I'm okay.
Is there any piece that you've made that you won't sell?
I do have some pieces on my wall that I have not sold and won't sell because they were just for me. I've had people that have admired them, but I'll just say, no, that's for me. But then there's a lot of things that I create just for the sake of getting that feeling out, you know, and I'm okay about letting it go. But special pieces, I do have them.
So tell me about your special pieces. What makes them special, and why do you want to keep them?
Because it was through my own involvement. For a long time, I was trying to find my way and what my purpose was. And so a lot of times it was just self-growth, and I was working on something, you know, how you might feel a little bit depressed or something like that, and you're working on this piece, and this piece, is, as it evolves, is kind of you're taking bits and pieces of you and putting into it, and then at the end of it, it's such a revelation. So pieces like, anything like that I have up on my wall, now not every single thing on the wall has that same attachment, because some pieces I put on the wall I have actually sold off the wall, but there are some things that I won't sell. It's because it has that type of meaning. It's something that I work through, or just something that I say, okay, this is something I need just for me, I need to look at, I need to have around me, and I go in that direction. But when I start working on something, it's not always that I'm going into it with, this is going to be a piece just for me. It's just the feeling that it evokes at the end of the time I finish it that I said, no, this is something that's special, and it only has a meaning for me. It might, someone else might like it, but it has a special meaning for me, and so I don't want to let it go.
What does your family think of your artwork?
You know, my children actually used to think that I was magical, because when they were little, they would see a lot of stuff, you know, whether I was doing a sculpture or a sewing or whatever, they would see a lot of stuff on the table or someplace in the house. And when they would wake up, it would be in a different form. So they never saw the process of what I was going through, because I would put them to bed because I needed that quiet time. And also, so to them, I've always been an artist. That's all they know about me. They were born into it, and my kids are grown now. And so... they would have to tell their own story, but they don't know it. They don't know me any other way. Mommy is just always creative and that type of thing. But none of my children. Now my oldest son, my oldest son is deceased, but the next oldest son is a therapist, because I'm also an art therapist, and he went into therapy because he works with he lives in Miami, Florida, so he does that type of work. My daughter loves to make candles, but it's two of my grandchildren that are artists that just came out of the womb wanting to create. So it missed my kids, but came to my grandchildren. Now, so they like it, and of course when they want something on their wall or something like that, you know, well, Mom, what do you have, or what can you do, or that type of thing. So, and I love to give art. I love to sell art, too, but I love to give art to my friends as special gifts, you know, special anniversaries or birthdays or something like that, something that's personal from me to them that That's designed just for them or something. So.
Is there anything you'd like to add before we conclude?
I think that I've shared pretty much with you maybe the series, and I don't know what will evolve from that or what's going to evolve each day, because I've gotten quite a bit of interviews based on me creating that first quilt. I've been interviewed quite a few times before, but not quite like this, and so I don't know what's going to be at the end of this, you know, in terms of my creative world. And so I'm just looking forward to watching it unfold and just enjoying the ride and just enjoying my creativity and being the best artist that I can be, because you know how everybody makes a New Year's resolution about losing weight, that type of thing. My New Year's resolution is always to be a better person than I was the year before, and that goes in, along with my art as well, just being the best artist that I know how to be.
Tell me a little bit about art therapy. Do you use quilt making at all in your art therapy?
I do a lot of workshops, and I combine both the art therapy and the creativity. I don't necessarily go into a group saying, you know, this is therapeutic. What I do is, for instance, when someone asks me if I would do a workshop for them, and they tell me what they want, especially if they have a theme in mind of what they want, and then I create something around that, because I like to do chairs with children, and I've done a lot of those. There was the school was getting rid of a lot of the old school chairs, the little wooden chairs, and so I collected quite a few of them. So I've done workshops with children where they were given a chair, and then the kids look at the chairs like, I don't want this chair because the chair is all dirty and that type of thing. So they have to clean the chair, and then they have to, and I show them how they prepare the chair for another, you know, to give it a new life, actually cleaning it and then putting a primer on it. And then while the primer is drying, I have them draw a picture on paper, and you know, because they're going to change the seat of that chair, the back of the chair. They're going to give that chair a life, but the kind of life that they would want it to have. And after I prune them, because when they're drawing, it can't be any gang signs, can't be anything negative, can't be anything vulgar. It has to be, you know, just an honest drawing. And so after okaying their drawing, then I show them how to translate that drawing from the paper into their chair and that type of thing. And then after the drawing is there, whatever age group they are, you know, it'll be the drawing based on what they can do. And then I teach them how to preserve it, you know, like putting the sealing it and that type of thing. And so the whole workshop is about self-esteem, but of course I'm not telling the kids that it's about self-esteem, but they're taking that chair from where it was to where it is, and all of a sudden you see the pride in their faces because they can tell you every step of the way how they got to create that chair, and they take great ownership and great pride in that. So that's how I kind of include art therapy into any art workshop that I'm doing, whether it's for children or whether it's for an adult. I will take the feeling of what it is that I'm supposed to be working on with them, whether it's self-esteem or whether it's about fulfillment. Or I've also worked with cancer survivors, and so I did a thing about wellness and prosperity, but I included into the products that we were doing, you know, and I build my activity around that so that they can get that type of a feeling, you know. So that's how I include the art and art therapy.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day and sharing with me.
Uh-huh.
And good luck with completing your Obama series.
You're welcome, because like I said, I started on number 4 already, and I'm midway through that, you know. So I know that at the end of creating these 7 quilts, I'm probably going to pass out. I can tell you that up front. I'm going to pass out because I can feel my exhaustion coming, but at the same time, I feel exhilarated. Yeah, I just feel excited that I've got to, you know, how you, like someone running a marathon, they're exhausted, but they just can't give up. They got to stay on the path.
Yeah.
That's where I am.
Oh, that's a great way to conclude our interview. So
okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we were not even interrupted.
No. And we're going to conclude our interview at 11:13.
Okay.